And welcome to another edition of Club Cruz. I'm your host, Robert Norse. I'm a homeless activist in the community of Santa Cruz. And with me tonight is Michael Schmidt, CEO of the Area Chamber of Commerce, and for the last year and a half, an unlikely partisan for homeless rights.
Hello, Robert. Glad to be here.
Hey, glad to have you, Michael.
Thank you.
Now, you initially joined this struggle for, I guess it's many things. It's for shelter, it's for decent treatment of people who are poor and people who are outside. It's for, let's start with those two issues. And you began, I guess, a year ago, and were seeking for legal places for people to sleep. And you actually talked the Chamber of Commerce, who many of us regard as one of the most conservative groups in town, into supporting that position.
Not only the Chamber of Commerce, but the Downtown Association and the Mission Street Business Association. It just struck me that if we were going to be able to address this issue, there had to be an equation for business. Business had to be part of this process, and they were kind of quiet and silent, with a lot of paranoia, somewhat justified, somewhat not justified. And when we sat down and we looked at the human rights issues, when we looked at the number of people who are working, poor people in this community, who are living in their vehicles or not housed at all or shelterless altogether, it just seemed like it was the right thing to do. So we got our board to pass a resolution supporting safe and legal places for the homeless to sleep. At that time, we were envisioning that the armory would be a potential site for that, and that we would be able to support the city in their efforts. We agreed to even go to Sacramento, if that's what it took, to meet with the governor.
And you also looked at the police station. You looked at parking lots. You even sought out the county parking lot and the Emmeline Street parking lot.
Yes, those were two other areas that we looked at. We were under some assumption that the police department actually had people there at night, thinking that would be a safe place for people to sleep in their vehicles.
Well, I would hope that somewhere in their $13 million cost overrun total budget for the police department, they could find a little chunk of money for an officer at night to help provide safety for homeless people.
Well, I think they have. They funded the homeless resource officer, which is part of that process. But at the time,
Now they're safe, but they can't sleep at night. That's,
well, unfortunately, we haven't made a lot of progress, as you well know.
Well, you did, not only you brought this issue of safe sleeping places, but you further took another step and looked for safe sleeping zones, which was again proposed after a lot of protests and fasts, and I think there was a protest called Waiting for Sugar, where lobbyists, including myself and others, waited in the offices of Mayor Sugar last year for the safe sleeping zone proposal, which proposed setting up industrial zones, two of them, where people could park their vehicles and even sleep on the sidewalks, and one would have hoped in the parks, maybe open the parks at night, though that wasn't actually a part of that particular proposal. And that one kind of went down, but you, although I guess the chamber didn't actually back that proposal specifically.
No.
But you did, personally.
Yes.
And then I think you went beyond that. You formed the Homeless Working Group kind of in the last days of trying to push for that proposal and for putting on the ballot a proposal to decriminalize sleeping for homeless people in Santa Cruz somewhere, in some areas. You established a group called the Homeless Working Group.
I was part of the organizing group. Yes, you could say I was one of the members of that. I think what our efforts were at the time is we had the city council election going on. We wanted to sit down. We were able to interview, I think, nearly every city council person seeking office to determine where they were on this issue and what were their commitments, or would they be willing to make commitments. We got a few out of some, and we helped educate others because I think it was a process for them as well as for us, a learning process on what and where they're coming from and what and where we were coming from the issue of homelessness in this community.
As I remember, most of the council candidates, not all of them, but most of them supported ending the sleeping ban. Which is, of course, the section of the camping ordinance, which I have a copy of here, which actually makes it illegal to sleep outside or in a vehicle after the hour of 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning. And this is a peculiar kind of thing because you have 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz every night who have no legal place to sleep whatsoever, and it's kind of very, very strange. And it's unlike most codes in any other municipal code in the entire state of California. So city council candidates weighed in against this. Actually, the Green Party almost made it a criterion for those they endorsed, like Ed Porter, and I guess we have a Green Party mayor who way back when was supposed to be endorsing this ban on sleeping bans, if you will. And yet, at the same time, we've had that. This election came and went, this 2000 election, and lo and behold, there's been no action to end or even modify the sleeping ban law or to expand shelter by one iota. Now, am I exaggerating?
Unfortunately, you're not exaggerating at all, Robert. The hopes that many of us had that Ed Porter or others who had indicated in their meetings with us that if they were elected, they would move this issue quickly, especially given at that time we're moving into the winter season, another season that for this year was very wet and very cold and caught cold very early in the season. We had anticipated that they were going at least to bring it to the council. Even if they voted it down, at least they had made that commitment they would be willing to do that. And as of, this is May the 2nd, 2001, we've seen nothing of that happening at this point in time.
Well, hopefully when the show airs in several weeks, Ed Porter or Mayor Fitzmaurice or Vice Mayor Crone or Councilmember Sugar or Emily Riley, those are four or five votes, and that's enough to change the sleeping ban within two sessions. And
yep.
As an emergency, they could change it in one session if they got a fifth vote from, say, Councilmember Kennedy. Certainly, giving people the right to sleep somewhere is not, in a way, providing them more social services unless you set up a campground, unless you set up shelters. Why are you passionate on this issue at all? I mean, this is just a way of saying this is a you're going to give these people, what, the right to sleep in the rain? What kind of an idea is that?
Well, I know that it's a sad state of affairs in a community or in a country such as we live in, that we have homeless people on our streets or in our back alleys or in our parks or in our greenbelt areas in the first place. But to make them criminals for the act of sleeping, the human act of sleeping, to me is just ludicrous. And that's where it kind of draws the line for me as a personal value. It's one thing to say you can't camp someplace and you can't stay here without paying a fine or paying a fee, whatever it is, as you would if you were a tourist coming into a community wanting to stay at one of our beaches, the state beaches, for example. This is just the act of sleeping. And I know I read one of the judges' opinion, well, they can sleep during the day. Well, I don't think that's a solution either. People normally sleep at night. That seems to be the time that most of us sleep.
But isn't this good training for the homeless to have them sort of walking around at night and kind of vigorously...
Well, maybe if we've empowered them, we could make them into security systems. I mean, they could help secure our neighborhoods and stuff like that. But I think the reality is that there is a good segment of the them are working poor people, so they go to work in the morning just like you or I do.
Or try to.
They've got children, so children usually prefer to sleep at night. And I think until we can come up with a better method, a more comprehensive countywide approach to dealing with this issue, and unfortunately Santa Cruz, for all of its criticism, is probably one of the few communities in this county that's taking a lead role, at least doing something, with providing a homeless shelter with the Armory in the wintertime.
Which serves 5% of the population.
Which does serve
tonight,
a very small
instance.
Percent of mm-hmm. the population. I don't think they serve anybody tonight because the Armory is not available.
Right. I'm speaking of actually the churches.
Yeah.
The Armory closed on April 15th, of course.
So it just struck me that from a human rights perspective, the idea of criminalizing someone for sleeping, the idea that you could be rousted by a police officer, who probably this is not the first thing on their priority list or something they really want to do, is to bother somebody, especially if they're not bothering anybody else. I mean, if they're creating other acts of defecation or whatever, that's something else. But just for the pure act of sleeping, that's where I kind of draw the line personally.
Well, you know, I know that there are those who disagree with you. They've heard you make positive statements about the police department and city council. And I myself, you know, am not uniformly negative about everything the police department does.
Well, that's rare.
Yeah, well, it happens.
It happens, okay.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, there are those who say, for example, that when the initiative to end the sleeping ban was put forward in 1997-98, the only organization that came out against it was the Santa Cruz Police Department. The Downtown Association was neutral. And, of course, it was the police department that informed misinformed homeless people that they could come to the zones, the so-called safe sleeping zones last year, when they weren't even in existence, and inform neighbors that they couldn't, that the police department could not enforce any laws because it was all the city council's doing. And as a consequence, there was a great backlash that got created and the zones were defeated. And this is my understanding to some extent of what happened. You were on the inside in that process. You were part of Mayor Sugar's kind of select committee. Am I wrong about that?
I don't think you're totally right. And then again, you're not totally wrong. It was my understanding that one of the council members who was not part of the Sugar Team,
Councilmember Mike Rotkin, perhaps.
I believe he may have been the one, went on radio or television or something and kind of let it be known that we had lifted the sleeping portion of the camping ban.
The camping ban itself,
I think this information was filtered to the police department. There were probably some officers who, you know, turned on their TV at night and saw Mr. Rotkin and said, oh, well, I guess that's something I don't have to enforce. It's not something I wanted to enforce in the first place.
And Mayor Sugar just didn't happen to be watching the television and didn't feel it necessary to make those corrections.
Apparently not, or if he did, it was a day late and a dollar short. But we did get inundated, or at least that was the perception. Now, I visited both the Natural Bridges area myself and visited the Harvey West area. More of the vehicles that I saw were not people I would think were homeless. I think they were tourists. When you see Airstreams, which are very nice, expensive mobile homes attached to a nice, brand-new pickup truck, that doesn't strike me as something that a homeless person is probably going to be living in. And I think that in the few that I talked with, they had come here for years as vacationers. And they were told, oh, let's go, hey, you can, they heard on the radio or the TV that, oh, come on down to Santa Cruz. We don't have a camping ban anymore, so this just kind of encouraged some of them to come early.
Did you see problems in the zones that were serious and intractable, as some opponents claimed, and as Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar now say is the reason that not only were these zones voted down, but that they will not even bring them up or discuss them again?
The sad part about it, and what Keith and others, and I give Keith a lot of high marks in this effort, Emily Roddy was part of that group. David Silva was part of that group. Police Chief Belcher was part of the group. A couple of others whose names escaped me. Was the idea that we were, first of all, going to do outreach into these areas. We were going to talk to the affected areas. We were going to find out what their concerns were, figure out where was a good place to put porta potties, where was a good place to put trash receptacles, where would not be a good place to have people
parking. Which had been
mandated
a year and a half before by Crone's Commission on Bathrooms and not put in.
This is true. I was on the restroom, the Crone Crapper Task Force, I guess it was called, and we focused on the downtown area. We got those in. And it was supposed to. We haven't met in months, so I don't know what the status is of that effort. But at the time, we were supposed to talk with the property owners, talk with the affected areas, work out a reasonable compromise. We knew that, for example, in Harvey West, there was a couple of businesses already were allowing homeless people who were living in their vehicles to park in their parking garage because they saw it as part of a security force that was helping to provide some additional security for the people because they had 24-hour shifts. It was the exception, not the rule by any means, but it was a beginning. And unfortunately, when the misinformation went out, it created such a hysteria. And of course, if you're sitting out here and you see, you know, one day you have five vehicles, the next day you have 15 in front of your business, you get kind of panicky. You call your local city council person
What I noticed was that there was never any investigation done of whether there was any substance to the complaints that eventually came forward from the business. I mean, the fact that there are more vehicles might cause some alarm, the fact that misinformation is getting out, but there were lots of charges that were flung around about a massive number of complaints that I never saw any documentation for and that I think was never actually documented. But since that time, other things have happened, and you and I and others formed this homeless working group, which took special interest in documenting what each council candidate said about the sleeping ban. And indeed, the Green Party, for its part, had their own concerns about the sleeping ban. For years, it's been a part of their platform, and particularly in Santa Cruz, they've required it more recently for endorsement. You have to not act soon to end the sleeping ban. I think you believe you said that by Valentine's Day, there was supposed to be action by Councilmember Porter, who was endorsed by the Green Party, but such action never happened. I know that he told me he was going to act on the sleeping ban the night that he was put into office, whenever they actually were, crowned.
Installed, yes.
He was going to work on it later that week, and he was going to get right back to me by phone. But for some reason, I haven't heard anything in 6 months. And I think maybe it's my phone. I have a problem. You know, my phone service is a little dicey at times.
You probably should get a cell phone.
Yeah, that could be it. Maybe they'll get me a cell, and I'll get a phone. It could work
that
way.
There's probably someone that would love to see that.
So you formed another group, you and others, a group that I guess it was called initially was called the Mainstream Abolitionists and the Mainstream Advocates, and most recently it's been called the Monday Morning Group.
Right. We started out with the concept of trying to figure out a way to get more of the public involved and to get more business people, because one of the things was interesting when the chamber took this stand, and I know it frustrated some of my board members, I had over 100 to 25 to 150 calls and probably another 30 to 50 emails from chamber members telling me this was the right thing to do.
This being?
Getting decriminalizing the act of sleep, finding safe and legal places. I remember a number of them telling me, I've helped employees of mine who lost their housing because of massive rent increases or whatever it might have been, hospitalization that took away one income from the household that made it impossible for them to make their mortgage payments, whatever the condition was, and that they knew people personally who had been victimized under this current system and said, I'm glad to see you moving forward. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that a business community has a social responsibility as well as an economic responsibility. They do go hand in hand. One of the core values of the chamber is focused on what's good for the community is going to be good for business. This is a factor in our community. Homelessness is a factor, a fact, not just a reality. Unfortunately, what happened, I think, with this whole sleeping zone issue was the perception got out of hand. People responded with more generalities than facts, and the council pulled back and walked away from it.
But the strange thing is the council had three votes for the sleeping zones, even at the very end.
Yeah.
Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar all voted for the sleeping zones. And now they have two more votes, Riley and Porter, for sleeping zones or some act to decriminalize sleeping. Yet no one will even put the issue on the agenda. And I understand your group has asked them explicitly to put the item on the agenda, secured a commitment at one point from Councilmember Porter that it be put on the agenda, and Mayor Fitzmaurice, the Green Party mayor, vetoed that idea. Is that true?
This is true. In fact, we went out and gathered a few hundred signatures in a couple of hours asking that this issue be brought back onto the public agenda and have yet to have anything happen. So from that, the Monday morning group, as we like to call ourselves because we've been meeting every Monday for weeks now, is trying to promote a concept that's from Daryl Dodge, who is an author of a book called Regionalism, and looking at how a model there called Action Town Halls, where you try to bring a select number of people together on a particular issue, you debrief them on the issue, you sit down and you talk about the issue, and in this case we will actually have homeless people at the table telling their stories so they can dialogue in real time what's happening, and then to come out with 3 to 5 action steps on a particular issue related, a sub-issue within the homeless, so let's say it's repeal of the sleeping portion of the camping ban, it's setting up safe sleeping zones or whatever it might be, getting a year-round shelter, and then finding who in the heck it is that should be out here to implement that. Is that the city? Is that the business community? Is that religious community? Or is that a combination thereof? And then getting those people to move forward on a more of a massive countywide approach to dealing with this issue.
This is coming up in, I guess, June or July. You have this slated for this town, this Action Town meeting that you're proposing. I, of course, have been rather skeptical about that, and I believe that we're having more talk. We've had the Homeless Issues Task Force, which have given recommendation after recommendation ignored by the City Council. We've had hours and hours of meetings in 1997, compliments of Councilmember Kennedy on the issue. We've had the task force to examine the camping ordinance 2 years ago. It's all been gone over endlessly. The question is, where's the community will to force the city council to take the actions that need to be taken, or alternately, to press the matter in the courts at the same time, either on a case-by-case basis or as a constitutional challenge? And my thought with your new group was, and of course every group has its own perspective, is you would want to mobilize the community.
Oh, I think that's what the Action Town Hall approach is trying to do. Mm-hmm. First of all, to get the political, the service providers, the average everyday person, the religious community, and the business community to sit down at the table, recognize that this is a problem, and it is not going to go away. And there's no easy solutions to it. Mm-hmm. But there are things that we can do and we should do. Some we can do very quickly, such as decriminalizing the act of sleep. Others, such as building a year-round shelter, that takes a long time, unfortunately. Housing in this community, I think I read recently, we have 12,000 housing units shortage right now in this community. The county has refused to accept state money, over $4 million a year, to go towards affordable housing for the poorest of our poor, and especially for our workers and working families in this community. So we're behind a rock and a hard place. The idea of the Action Town Hall, as we've done in other communities, as it's worked in forming regional approaches to solving problems, is to try to mobilize that public and take from that seed, that 150 people seed, and get it 1,500 people, 2,000 people, and put pressure. Reverend Chaim Levin is here working with the religious community.
Rabbi,
excuse me. Yeah. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You're right, Rabbi. Mm-hmm. And why do we keep wanting to call him Reverend? Rabbi Levin is here working and contacting the religious community.
And this is the same rabbi who in Baltimore stood toe-to-toe with the mayor and demanded the right to serve homeless people food, and was able to not only do that, and it publicly embarrassed the Baltimore mayor, but also to get more federal funds
$26 or $36 million,
something like that. But my concern about this whole town hall meeting idea is you don't have an advocacy group. You have a bunch of people who are sitting down, I'm afraid, about to posture again like they've done before. I mean, you initially had a group concerned about strong action on the sleeping ban. Then you had you evicted me from the group because the city council, tell me if I'm wrong, said they wouldn't talk to the group if I were a part of it. Isn't this, in fact,
you've made yourself persona non grata with them, and mm-hmm. and we feel, and I feel, that the political establishment is part of the answer. They have the way to make laws. They have the way to change laws. They also have a lot of money that they could direct towards solving the problem if they chose to. Alienating that group, in my judgment, doesn't solve us and doesn't help us on the problem.
But aren't they a part of the answer once you have the community mobilized behind you on that issue? The idea of going to them first, to me, puts you in a position where you end up posturing for them, and you've already found your attempts to contact Porter, who, as I understand, was attempting some kind of resolution, some kind of recodification of the sleeping ban. This has been the great secret that he's kept for, what, 4 or 5 months? He's been dangling this in front of your eyes and not presenting it? I mean, am I being too critical of Ed here? Or?
Well, I don't know if you're being too critical, Ed. I know that Ed is doing his thing. He's busy. He's trying to, as he says, examine it from a technical perspective to see what technical adjustments could or could not be made. He indicated he's concerned about...
But he's not told you anything about what he's doing, right?
No, well, I mean, that's his prerogative.
Maybe he's afraid you'll tell me.
That could be.
And I could ruin everything.
You could put it in the
street sheet
and, and really embarrass him or whatever. So,
right.
But... It strikes me that if it turns out that the political establishment does not want to be involved in this, we will probably and most likely will go ahead with it with whomever we can bring to the table. And if that leaves out the political establishment, then maybe what you're approaching is going to be the reality. But activism in this community has not worked either.
Oh, I disagree.
Well,
I think activism...
Do we have campgrounds? No. Do we have a repeal sleeping ban? No. Do we have a year-round shelter? No.
Do we have people being arrested for serving free food? No, because activists...
Well, that's
why... Do we have an ISSP program? Yes.
Okay.
Because activists...
Now, that's good. Okay.
I mean, we have a number... And I'm saying that there isn't one approach that's necessarily the best.
Yes, it's multiple.
But, yeah, it's multiple approaches. And you yourself have a third approach. You're... getting a bunch of heavy right-wing backers to run for board of supervisors. I see an I Like Mike button. Now, what's that about?
Well, it strikes me that 20-some-odd years of political rule that we've had...
This better link
into
the sleeping ban.
Third district, including the sleeping ban, has left us with a lot of crisis in this community. A lot of the things that we value as a community we have, but we don't have. We've got a green belt, but we have no accessibility or management plan for that. So if you're the elderly, you're the disabled, you're young or old, some of these lands they still don't want you to be on.
Now, we'll admit that Marty Wormhout, your chief opponent here, has, in fact, done a miserable job around decriminalizing sleep either in the city when she was mayor or in the county, and I will do a separate show on her. That's not really the issue. The issue is, are you going to be able to maintain a position? I mean, Marty is a liberal, a progressive on numerous issues. You have taken this maverick stand about decriminalizing sleep. And in the county, of course, it's an equally difficult problem. There's a different sort of set of laws, but had we time to talk about it, we'd go into it at greater length. But it looks like we're running out of time here. So I guess what I'm going to ask you to do is how can people, first of all, join this Monday morning group and actually kick it in the butt so it will actually do something real instead of spending its time excluding militants like myself and schmoozing with city council members?
Well, what we have done and what we do is we're meeting at the Homeless Resource Center Monday mornings at 8 o'clock. We've moved there because we feel it's very important to have homeless people involved in this process. And this is a slow, agonizing, and painful process we're learning.
That's
115 Coral Street. Mm-hmm. It's at 8 o'clock on Mondays mornings. We try to meet for about an hour or so. And we had 3 homeless people that showed up, and they've gotten very involved with it. They like the concept.
Every Monday between 8 and 9.
Mm-hmm. And I might say that I don't see the fact that I have a horde of, what did you call them, right-wing conservatives. And if you could line all the right-wing conservatives up in Santa Cruz, you'd have a line of probably 2 or 3, and that's not enough money or people to do anything. Until I moved to Santa Cruz, I thought I was a progressive Democrat. because I think in some areas we are very progressive. But here's an example, the sleeping portion of the camping ban, where progressives in any other country, in any other part of the world, in any other state, would have taken this on the issue, and this would not be a discussion for item.
You would think so.
But
now,
here it is.
What number can people call to get in touch with you for the Monday morning group?
Right now, if you want to give a call to 457-3718, that's a good number to call, and we'll we're still finalized. We don't have office spaces or anything like that. We're just a bunch of folks who are concerned about this issue.
I should also add that if people you sometimes are appear on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM.
96.3
FM.
When
I can trick you into being on my show, which is every Sunday from 11 to 1:30 in the afternoon, and every Thursday from 6 to 8.
I was going to say, and on Thursdays as well?
In the afternoon,
yes. In the
afternoon,
okay.
Yes, that's at 96.3.
That's on the FM dial?
That's on the FM dial.
Okay.
I'm glad you remembered that.
I do.
It's
in my radio. I plugged it into my radio.
At last, a man of some erudition in our society here.
We try.
We have been talking with Michael Schmidt, who is one of the most unusual CEOs of a chamber of commerce that's ever been my pleasure to know, and a man who is willing to stand up for principles even in the face of conservative supporters dangling large wallets in front of him and asking him to take perhaps other directions. And I want to thank you for being on the show, Michael, and I hope that you can get something out of this city council. I think you're going to need to do a lot more punchy kind of action than is being done. But thank you for doing what you're doing.
You're welcome, sir.
All right. Well, and I want you to join us for another edition of Club Cruise. It'll be, of course, every Tuesday and Thursday from 7 to 7:30. You get a chance to see this show. And believe me, it's worth it, whether I'm the host or not. Even when you're the guest, I would like to add this point.
Well, thank you, Robert. Even when you're the host.
Well, I will let that slide in this matter.
Well, you said it was going to be Johnny Carson.
I did. I did. It is indeed the infamous sleeping ban, and I guess we are proceeding to
roll off the
roll
locally. Not only to provide medical marijuana to people.